Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 16, 2020. Two people were killed during shooting between national security officers and former rebels of the SPLM-IO.
They have been continuing doing this for several times, and it is reported even to the highest authority in the country. For several times they have been doing this, and we have been tolerating it because there is already peace signed, and the ceasefire also declared by the Secretary President of the Republic.
And the UN Agency for Refugees say the corona-related lockdowns in Sudan has affected refugees.
Imagine you are uprooted, you're not at home, you are thrown somewhere into exile, you don't have anything else except the hut where you are living and the clothes that you are wearing, and suddenly there is this pandemic out there.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Two people were killed and several others injured in a crossfire during shooting between South Sudan national security operatives and former rebels of the SPLM-IO in Tombura on Monday. Local leaders say the clashes started when the former rebels tried to rob a civilian in Tombura town. The acting administrator for Western Equatorial State has condemned the incident. Seba Martin Morangi reports for VOA from Juba.
Agre Soro, acting administrator for the now defunct Tombura State, says SPLM-IO forces regularly come into Tombura town to harass citizens.
They come always and then they find citizens and they say you pay so much. They want this man, the poor man, to pay something to them, which is not correct. And it is not the first time. They have been continuing doing this for several times. And it is reported even to the highest authority in the country. For several times they have been doing this. And we have been tolerating it because there is already peace signed and the ceasefire also declared by the Secretary President of the Republic.
Soro says the shooting began yesterday after South Sudan national security operatives stopped the SPLM-IO forces from holding up the Darfur man for money. Speaking in Zande, Brigadier Santu Ali Mbatayo, head of the SPLM-IO forces in Tombura, denied his men opened fire on government security agents, but admits his forces had what he calls an encounter with National Security Service operatives.
My people went yesterday to buy flour for us in the market, and they got our colleagues, the national security, who opened fire at them. My home in Tambura town has been destroyed and chased all my wives and children away. Even here in Nambiama barracks, they also came yesterday and burnt all our tents.
But I called on senior SPLM-IO officials to come to Tombura and listen to his side of the story. The SPLM-IO forces reside at a base in Nabiama, some 4 kilometers from Tombura town. Soro says Tombura leaders want SPLM-IO forces in the town to respect the rights of civilians and stop provoking government forces in the area. He says Tombura County leaders have tolerated the behavior of the former rebels for far so long.
So at the moment we have actually decided as a government in the state here, we are just going after him. That's all we have decided because it's too much for us. At the moment I have assigned our executive director is already talking to the citizens. The market is open and people are just moving freely. They are happy because of what we have done. They are happy actually.
William Mbaki, a former SPLM-IO designated governor for the now defunct Tombura State, condemned the behavior of a small group of his soldiers in Tombura.
We, the leadership of the IO, we condemn this kind of act in the strongest term possible. We are not actually allowed this kind of issue to happen. You know, the national security, including the IO, these are the friendly forces. There is no need for them again to have a clash between them. At this time, the country actually needs peace, not war again. So we call upon the group of Santu, the national security, including the administration of the Tombura, to handle the case in an administrative way.
Mbaki asked Brigadier Santu Mbatayo and his men to grant that they only come to Tombura town after informing the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and South Sudan National Security Service officials in the area to avoid conflict. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Murangi in Juba.
The leader of the Presbyterian Church in Pibor is calling on communities from Bor, Akobo, and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area to stop fighting and find a peaceful means of resolving their conflict. A leader from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area claims more than 300 people were killed and dozens of others injured in several villages during clashes. VOA could not independently verify the death toll from these latest clashes. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Speaking in Arabic by phone, eyewitness Jongle Aturuk, who left Gumruk yesterday for Juba, says he witnessed several clashes in Manyabol yesterday and saw some bodies lying on the ground.
I saw about 14 people who were injured. I don't know about the number of dead, but I saw some people were killed. These people look like an organized army, and they have lots of weapons, including big guns.
Judy Jonglei Boyoris, former speaker of the now defunct Boma State, says more than 300 people have been killed and dozens of others were injured over the last 3 days during fighting in the villages of Kotchar, Manyabol, and Gumruk.
The first fighting was 300 were killed, plus six again, I think. The number is increased. This is 2-3 days ago. Before yesterday, the fighting was very heavy, and I'm sure that so many people were killed. The attack has already captured Kwasiar, Payam, Manyapol. At the moment, they are in Pupe, and we don't know where are they aiming to.
Pok Tut Rang, leader of Lawnware Youth Association for Development, says armed youth from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area attacked Akobo last month and killed hundreds of people, but denies Akobo youth went on a revenge attack in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area last week.
The fear attacks was actually very, very, very sad to everyone in Greater Jonglei, because the world had lost about 200 or 300 people of the village, and more than 500 also wounded. One, yeah, but that one also they burned down all the 10 villages and have looted all the source of income, like the livelihood of those people really in Akobo or in Siri were taken by Murle. They burned down all villages to houses. So, youth actually become hungry, but there was no decision made for them to go and attack the Murle.
Ayuen Gwen Rohr, a spokesman for the Bor Community Youth Association, admits that armed youth from Bor County are staging revenge attacks in Manyabol after what he says were cattle raids carried out by armed Murle youth in Bor County months ago.
If somebody tells you the what you have survived for and kill your wife and kill your mother and also abduct your child and took your cattle and these are your resources, you have to follow up to where your resources are. Since 1916, they are doing the same thing, and recently they are doing it, and this is where we are surviving. We are going after our resources. We don't have any connection with anyone, and we don't want to have any connection with anyone. If they didn't return our cattle and our children back, they have to follow their cattle up to where the cattle will be.
The leader of the Presbyterian Church in Pibor, Reverend James Kiaru Lotiko, condemned the fighting in Pibor. Speaking in Arabic, Reverend Lotiko calls on the Dinka Bor, Lawnware, and Murle communities to find peaceful means of addressing their problems.
We, as the church, we have one message, and that message is we want peace, because the development can only come when there is peace instead of fighting. If we want to develop Jongle, let's have peace so that we can build roads, schools, and hospitals. The three tribes of Murle, Dinka, and Nuer must end this violence and embrace peace instead of killing themselves every year and every month.
Greater Pibor administrative area leaders have been urging the national government to intervene to end the violence. Lul Ruai Kwang is a spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Force.
These are recurrent communal clashes that we are, all of us are familiar with. Parts of Greater Jonglei as well as in parts of Greater Lakes, Greater Warap. These have been happening. I have not seen an official request presented for any kind of intervention.
Special Representative of the UN Secretary General David Scherer said in a statement last week that intercommunal clashes in South Sudan are causing immense harm to civilians and risk fooling organized armed groups into conflicts that could unravel the revitalized peace agreement. Since December 2019, the Army's chief said there has been an escalating cycle of violence in Jonglei involving the Dinka, Nuer and Murle communities. Violent attacks by armed groups also have occurred in Northern Unity State near Ruweng. Equally worrying, said Shira, are reports that men in uniform are taking part in the clashes. Fighters in uniform have been observed amongst those engaged in the violence, indicating that more organized forces may be joining, Shira said last week. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says the COVID-19 pandemic has affected 2.5 million refugees and internally displaced persons in Sudan. UNHCR officials say they are working with other humanitarian agencies to create awareness in camps and help refugees from South Sudan, Eritrea, Ethiopia, and the Central African Republic to protect themselves from contracting the disease. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Roland Schoenbauer, the UNHCR spokesperson in Sudan, says nearly a million refugees from South Sudan, Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Central African Republic, and 1.8 million Sudanese internally displaced persons have been affected by the pandemic.
Imagine you are uprooted, you are not at home, you are thrown somewhere into exile, you don't have anything else except the hut where you are living and the clothes that you are wearing, and suddenly there is this pandemic out there, and you even lose your informal job because the informal economy is breaking down. The humble income that you had to buy a new t-shirt for your child, all this is gone.
The UNHCR official tells South Sudan in Focus that about 40 refugees tested positive for COVID-19 across Sudan. He says UNHCR is working with local authorities to establish isolation centers in camps and border crossing points with neighboring countries in order to prevent the spread of the disease.
It is still always possible that the infection reaches the individual, and while a major outbreak has been prevented so far, individual cases of refugees and IDPs infected by COVID have been reported. That's why it's so important that UNHCR supports the authorities and has set up 14 isolation centers.
Roland says even though the UNHCR routine operations have been affected to some extent, his organization is still monitoring the situation in camps in conjunction with local leaders. He says UNHCR has teamed up with local and international health organizations to continue creating awareness among the refugees and IDPs about protective measures and how to spot the symptoms of the coronavirus.
We have engaged as UNHCR with IDP leaders and refugee community leaders over the past months so that they know how to respond, that they know how to report if there is someone with symptoms, that they raise awareness about the physical distancing, that they can spread the word about the importance of hand washing and protecting themselves and their communities.
UNHCR is trying to counter the myths and misinformation spread among communities about COVID-19 and to provide face masks, gloves, and other protective equipment in the camps, according to Roland.
We as UNHCR have some small support system here in Khartoum for the most vulnerable of the vulnerable, but that's not enough. The needs are much bigger. So there we do need more funds from the international community to make sure no refugee is left behind in this pandemic due to its economic impact.
Roland says more than 400 UNHCR staff across Sudan are also working to provide other urban refugees camps and IDP settlements with non-food items such as plastic sheets, blankets and mosquito nets, among other items, as the rainy season has already started. As of Monday, June 15th, Sudan has recorded more than 7,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, 468 deaths and 2,720 recoveries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are some of the problems facing COVID-19 patients? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what image do you think your country has internationally?
My country internationally has a very good image based on its level of security, the gender involvement of women in decision making, and its cleanliness.
Internationally, my country, we are seen as a hospitable country and very friendly and, you know, a strong country to us all.
It is good because, okay, in other areas like the tourism side of it, the security side of it, let me say like the locally, like these days we don't have like political instabilities in the country.
My country, at the moment, I think it has one of the poorest image because look at the taxes my country is imposing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. In our Tuesday Health segment, we look at the psychosocial help for COVID-19 patients. The South Sudan Council of Churches is providing psychosocial support to COVID-19 patients. The group launched a psychosocial and trauma care center Monday to help people affected by COVID-19 to recover from the psychological impact, negative attitudes, and social stigma associated with the disease. The Secretary General of the South Sudan Council of Churches says the center will work to fight myths and misinformation about the coronavirus among South Sudanese. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
The Psychosocial and Trauma Care Center will have up to 6 counselors at a time taking calls from people recovering from the coronavirus. People who need help can dial the toll-free number 2222 or 222. Father James Oyet is Secretary General of the South Sudan Council of Churches.
It's meant to respond to the psychosocial impact, to the trauma impact of the COVID-19 a different violence happening on South Sudanism and gender-based violence.
Father Oyet says the center will also work to counter myths and misinformation about coronavirus. Juba resident Agnes Wasuk Sarafino says many South Sudanese are in denial about COVID-19.
At the beginning, first when COVID-19 came in, when people hear about it, the normal people are like, this is not our disease. It is the disease of the white people, the people who live in the ACs, the people who eat chocolate. It will not come here because we eat combo, our blood is strong, our skin is protective. So now when it became reality, still people live in that sense of denial. They still believe that black people may not contract COVID-19.
Wasuk says many people still believe only the rich are infected. Others deny their relatives had the virus after they died, according to Wasuk.
So when you ask someone, this person died of what? You say, sukari. He died of sukari. They deny totally the issue of the COVID-19. And this is a point that we need to raise awareness to people. Because some of us believe that previously people die of diabetes, of hypertension, but the end of their lives were not ending with the difficulty in breathing. When someone has that, that means maybe COVID-19 has found a space to enter into the disease that they have.
Richard Amule, program manager at the South Sudan Council of Churches, says some people believe only those who are well-connected or who are rich become infected with COVID-19.
People are saying in the community that this pandemic, coronavirus, is specific for people who are a certain class, particularly people who work with the government, people who work with the NGOs, because they believe that these people, this class, the top classes, are traveling a lot, the business people. So that they believe that it is specific for these people. It's not for the ordinary people down there, because they believe they are not moving, so it's not possible that it will be able to really, you know, get them.
Amule says many people in South Sudan still don't believe there is coronavirus in the country and do not follow precautionary measures.
There are some people who can believe is when they see that this disease has affected their passion, and the person is seriously ill, admitted, and that is when they will take it seriously.
James Wani is the South Sudan country director for the NGO Christian Aid, which helped the Council of Churches set up the center.
So through this center, anybody in South Sudan, regardless of where they are, they can call for free. All they need is an MTN line, and then they will be able to receive services.
Wani says people who call the toll-free number will get the facts from counselors who are trained to separate the facts from fiction on COVID-19. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio.
As protests in Washington, D.C. against racism and police brutality near their fourth consecutive week, a loose network of volunteers has formed to supply food, water, and medical care to demonstrators. VOA's Jason Patenkin spoke to some of the people working to keep activism going and files this report from Washington.
The month of June is the start of summer in America. That means hot, humid weather in places like Washington, D.C., but so far, the summer heat has not meant an end to the anti-racism protests that have rocked America's capital for the last 3 weeks. That's in part thanks to a loose network of volunteers who are spending their days at the ongoing demonstrations near the White House. They hand out free food, water, and other supplies to protesters in hopes of keeping the movement going for as long as it takes to bring change. One of those volunteers, who gave her first name Davida, has helped set up a collection of tables, tents, and hammocks on the north end of Washington's Lafayette Square, which has been the epicenter of protests here.
We have waters, Gatorades, we're doing children's juice boxes, applesauce pouches, snacks. We have hand sanitizer and masks. We're trying to keep people educated about the pandemic as well. We've had people donate cloth masks and surgical masks. We also have all kinds of first aid supplies. We keep
They even have an
packs.
Open-air tent with electric fans and ice packs in case anyone overheats while protesting. Davida says it started out as a medical effort, helping treat people who were tear-gassed or otherwise injured during clashes with police.
And then it kind of just gained momentum. We started asking our friends for help and donations, and we were live streaming a lot to make sure everyone knew what was going on. And people just wanted to help, so it kind of grew from there. We brought in thousands of dollars of donations. People have come daily to bring us deliveries of ice and food. This has been a community set up completely. We're not with any organization. We're not with any other one else. We're just a bunch of people from the area, from this community, that just want to see change. And we want to help people who are here to see the change. You know, we want to make sure their voices stay heard as long as possible. And so we want to make sure everyone's okay.
Nearby is another tent with some grills where volunteers cook hundreds of meals each day to hand out for free to protesters. 33-year-old John is grilling hot dogs.
I grew up here locally in the service restaurant industry. So one thing I do know is that people love to eat and they always love great food. So I definitely know that one thing that you could contribute to a great cause is giving food to people to make sure that the fighters out here and the soldiers out here that are fighting for the oppressed people have something fuel so that they can keep going and keep fighting for that same energy. Because we all have the same message, and it's community. That's essentially the message behind all of this. It's community. So this is how I contribute to my community, by giving food. I've worked in the service industry for years as a waiter and in the back kitchen as well. So one thing that we know is we know how to cook food and serve it in a safe manner to people. So that's why we chose to take on this task. We know the proper precautions to make sure that the food is safe, the temperatures, the amount of sanitization that it needs. So that's why we say we need to do it for the people. So, you know, everybody, we don't want anybody to get sick. So that's why we chose to take this task on.
John says everything they've given out comes from donations from well-wishers, many of whom support the protests, but fearing the coronavirus pandemic, aren't able to come demonstrate themselves.
You know, everybody wants to pitch in. So it's amazing. It's overwhelming. It's very, you know, heartwarming to see everybody giving back to, you know, help everyone feed. They donate the grills. You know, people help donate money for the food so that we can feed everybody. We just have to be here to cook it.
Not all the volunteers are so well structured. There are also individuals or small groups of friends giving out supplies, like Nyotin Danga, who stood in front of Lafayette Square recently with a group of friends handing out water bottles.
We're all a group of friends, and we're not part of any organization or social group. We just wanted to help the community the best way that we could. And we thought that if we could get some water, get Gatorade, get some snacks, be able to pass it out to protesters who are actually out here fighting for our rights, then that's the best way that we can to give back to our community as Black women. You know, this is the time of change. This is the time of the revolution starting. And anything that we could do to help make that happen, we want to do. So we thought this would be the best way of our contribution.
For Nyoti and so many other volunteers like her, supporting the protests is her way of bringing change. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with Lonely Boy singing about the coronavirus.
COVID-19 virus, coronavirus, is dangerous. A BMC music.
Yeah. I saw the beat.
Everybody get to know.
Coronavirus.
Everybody get to know.
Coronavirus.
Corona. Ayan batal.
Oh, batal.
Sikili ayani. Muskila.
Oh, batal.
Hey, brother. You have to know.
You have to know,
sister. You have to know,
you have to know.
Corona,
yeah.
Dangerous,
dangerous.
Corona,
yeah.
Iron battle,
oh battle.
It can spread, yeah. Through cough. It can spread, yeah. Through sneezing.
Sneezing.
It can spread through body contact.
Body contact.
Corona, Corona from China.
China.
Let's fight the Corona. We have to stay at home, avoid crowding.
We
have to wash our hands with the soap,
with the soap.
Wash your hands regularly,
regularly.
Everybody get to know.
We've been listening to Lonely Boy with the song Coronavirus. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ita ye dinge, ita roman, ayala ye munda kalas.